And it's time for the animal voices, and the animals are herding in, and here they go.
Yes, welcome everyone to Animal Voices. Alice Walker said, "The animals of the world exist for their own reasons. They are not made for humans any more than black people were made for white, or women created for men." In this program, Animal Voices, we envision a world where the human race will finally make peace with the animal kingdom. We envision a world where human beings will no longer kill, maim, torture, and exploit fellow beings for food or any other purpose. Yes, you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFR Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver, affectionately known as Co-op Radio, your community-based and community-sponsored radio station. Thank you, Alan Jensen, for being in the control room. My name is Carl Roskin, and in the studio today, we have John Pranger. And John, what will you be doing today?
Well, Greenpeace has called for genetic labeling of Canadian products and consumer products, and because engineered corn sold as livestock feed for the Monsanto company was found to be toxic to rats.
There we go.
So I'm a little bit pissed off.
Thank you, John. And you have good reason. And Alard, thank you for being in here today. And what will you be doing today?
I have a mule story, and when I came across this, I wasn't sure if I was going to laugh or I was going to cry, so I'll give that to you later.
So, joys and agonies of life. Shortly, we will be speaking with our special in-studio guest, Denise Swanson, who is the facilitator of the Earth Save Canada Readers Group, and she was a wonderful volunteer and the volunteer coordinator for the Animal Voices Film Festival. In the second half of the program, Jesse Fraser will inform us about what happens at the Valley Therapeutic Equestrian Stables in Langley. Stay tuned. The best is yet to be. The human body has some 100 trillion cells, each performing millions of tasks each second. For the body to be healthy and fit, these cells have to function as a resonant, harmonious whole. The magnificence of this complex orchestration is staggering and is synchronized by the body's intelligence, energy, and the fields. The health benefits of plants, foods, knows no limit. The more scientists look, the more impressive data they develop concerning the array of health benefits conferred by fruits, nuts, seeds, beans, whole grains, and vegetables. It's pretty safe to say that science will never be able to delineate fully all the miraculous ways that the plants we ingest work to keep us alive and well. Yet never will you read a story about eating chicken helping you to prevent one disease or another. Not a single news item will appear anywhere about chuck steak or meatballs aiding any of your organs to function. Roast beef offers no benefit that any scientist can find. And Howard Lyman wrote, and he said, "And don't think for a minute that the meat industry hasn't tried to look to find." The only medical reports you will hear about animal food concerns their dangers. The bad news about the animal foods never ends. And that's from Howard Lyman's book, No More Bull. Well, as we said before, we're very privileged to have with us in our studio today Denise Swanson, who is the facilitator of the Earth Save Readers Group. And of course, she was a wonderful person who organized the volunteers at the Animal Voices Film Festival. Well, the readers group meets once a month, and maybe you can tell us which book was your featured book this past month, and then we'll go on from there.
Yes, thank you, Carl. I'm honored to be here. The Earth Save Readers group, which is a kind of book club, meets once a month in restaurants and members' homes. And we've been meeting for just about 3 years now. And the present book we're doing is called The World Peace Diet by Will Tuttle. The subtitle is Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. And this book was published a couple years ago, 2005, a very highly relevant book, which, well, I can tell you a little about the author.
Yes, maybe give us a bit of a story.
Sorry, before you, this is Alan, the operator, just jumping in here. Before you continue, the microphone you're using, Denise, seems to be going to sleep. Now, there's nothing I can do about it, but I want you to change microphones. I want, because Carl's microphone and John's microphone are both much better. So if you can move that, Denise can use that, good. And then Carl could use John's microphone for the time being, and then that'll work out just fine. Now hopefully this is not too boring, but we need to do this.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Alan, for making people be able to hear everything that needs to be said. Well, we're talking with Denise Swanson, and she's a facilitator at the Earth Save Canada's Readers Group. So maybe you can just give us a recap there, the book that you've been reading for the past month.
Yes, it's called The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony by Will Tuttle. Will Tuttle has a master's in humanities and a PhD in education. He was born in Concord, Massachusetts, and his family ran a chain of weekly newspapers, including The Beacon. So he grew up with quite a vivid social environment. And he learned, of course, all about the Transcendentalist movement, which was based in Concord, Massachusetts. He has trained as a Zen monk. He has lived in the Sungwangsa Monastery in South Korea, as well as at the farm community, which began with Stephen Gaskin in Tennessee. Both of those are vegan communities, so he learned about vegan diet there.
And one of the principles he lived by was that we reap what we sow. So maybe you'd like to just enlarge on that a bit.
Yes, well, actually, his dissertation thesis was called The Role of Intuition in Education, and he has studied in many ways the development of intuition throughout his life. And one of the things that he mentions in his book is that there are many aspects where we can see that there are connections between the way we treat animals, in particular our food animals, and what is happening to our society today. He gives quite a long list. For example, we force feed animals and cause them not to be able to move. And we humans have this obesity epidemic in our society. Many other things that we do to animals, such as destroying their families. Our families are breaking down. We routinely pump them with drugs. We have huge drug problems. We force them to live in filth. Our environment is horribly polluted. We imprison them. Our prisons are overflowing. We terrorize them. We have a terrorist problem. And he makes all these connections and sort of leaves it to us to think about how these are connected. He doesn't think they are random in any sense.
So what you're saying here is what we're doing to the animals, we're also doing to ourselves. And would it be correct to say that if we no longer inflicted all these agonies on the animals, we would be living in a more peaceful world? Is this the message?
This is the theme of the book. And that by practicing disconnecting and desensitizing through our food choices of eating animal products every day and not even thinking about the suffering that this entails, we are basically dumbing ourselves down. We practice not looking at the connections in what we are doing on a daily basis, and this makes us less compassionate as well as less intelligent.
Now, I know you've been an avid reader, and you just used that word, dumbing. So I've always been intrigued by that, and maybe there was an insight of that in the book. And one wonders whether it's insensitivity, dumbing, or denial. What is your take on that?
Yes, denial is mentioned quite a bit in the book, and he mentions that one of the reasons that we eat animal products is that we were indoctrinated from infancy to do so. We were fed animal foods from day one and never taught to question it, and so we don't think about things, and this leads to a kind of denial.
Right. John, you have a question for Alain?
Well, I was thinking of a question a moment ago when you said something about... but I can't recall it. I'm sorry, Carl, I can't help you out. You're
Okay, let's mention the name of the book again, and then maybe you can just give us it's quite a lengthy book, mm-hmm. but some of the other features of this whole idea of, you mentioned, we grew up with this and never question it.
Yes.
So this is society, but that's not so all over the world, because many vegetarian communities exist in pockets all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does he make any inference to those in the book?
Well, for example, those two communities that I mentioned where he lived that are vegan communities. What basically he says that we need to do is that we have to question everything that we do routinely and habitually, and that's the only way to sort of grow up as human beings.
What is the diet comprised of that he talks about? What did you call it?
It's called the World Peace Diet, and he actually doesn't tell us anywhere in the book what to eat. It's right. More at the beginning, first chapter, he has a long list of about 100 different plant foods, but of course we all know that there are thousands and thousands. He basically is saying that we need to leave animals off of our
list. And that will create
list.
Peace by itself?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, that this, he thinks that this is the number one thing that will teach us to be nonviolent.
Because it's such a change in attitude of the human being towards the rest of his environment.
Yes, if we practice violence, we will continue it.
But he's arguing that by practicing violence towards other species, that causes us to practice violence towards other human beings.
Exactly.
And, I mean, I dare say you probably could find examples of vegetarian cultures where there has been conflict. But I think, nonetheless, the basic thesis is really, really good. The whole idea of... it amounts to changing attitudes about animals, and so it's not just vegetarianism. It's the whole idea is changing the notion towards animals and seeing animals in a totally different light.
Right? Yes, he calls our culture the herding culture, which is based upon the mentality of domination and exclusion. So that's what we're wanting to work against.
One of the things I wanted to mention too is that the whole Buddhist concept too, of course. Not only what we're doing to others, we're doing to ourselves, but we're the first ones that experience what we're doing. So if we feel anger or hatred towards anybody else or another creature, well, the first person or first creature that experiences that anger is ourselves, not who we direct it to. And so that would make sense that then we are there multiplying it in our own mind by just generating it out. And so, of course, it's going to continue happening amongst ourselves.
Right. We always have to start with ourselves.
And that's how we get closer to nature as well. That's, I think, one of his themes that he also mentions there, that it literally becomes us when we eat. And as the general phrase is, we are what we eat. And if what we eat is sacrificed through violence, through killing, then that's the expression. I mean, that'll come out of us too. I know that when I see a Buddhist monk, it's sort of immediately the peace is almost infectious, that a calm overcomes me as well just by looking at the Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have an image of the Buddha sitting cross-legged in my study. So it's
I have a picture of two monks in the Himalayan valley, and in between the two monks are these tigers stretched out, they're rolling like this. Tigers? These monks are standing there in attendance. No harm comes to them. Mm. Why, I wonder? Because of intention?
Do no harm.
Yes, well, there is a whole chapter about the metaphysics of food, and all beings have vibrations, and I imagine those tigers could sense that much more clearly than we have been trained to do.
But you know, there's been violence associated with the growing of bananas and sugar and these things too, because yes, they've created very, very difficult conditions for indigenous people and have destroyed their cultures so that we could plant bananas and sugar cane.
Right.
So it's not just the violence committed on animals, but violence committed on plants and on human beings as a result of this, as a result of confused concepts, I think, of eating and agriculture and what that should be. You know, before transportation, where we could ship food for long distances, none of the diets that we have today would be possible. So the ideal diet would be the diet of the local community, and it would be kind of perfect because it would be in harmony with nature. As things grow and fruit, you consume them and so on, and lay up storage for the winter and so on. All these things would keep a person in balance and therefore in health. But this chaotic eating of today, where we eat from all over the planet, does not create in us the harmonious disposition that would otherwise be taking place.
Yeah. It's interesting that when archaeologists do digs just here on the West Coast, they can tell by the skeletons when they find them whether they're pre-contact or post-contact, right? Because all these diseases appear in the skeletons of the native people who were post-contact, whereas pre-contact, they just didn't happen. You know, people had a balanced diet. They'd been living in this environment for, hundreds, thousands of years, and there was a very, symbiotic relationship between them and their environment, and they just didn't. They obviously had some disease, but basically they were a very healthy population who had all the food they needed in their diet. But as soon as Europeans came along and started introducing stuff and other elements into the diet, they just
flour and sugar mostly.
Well, we're not very good at foraging anymore, so support your local farmer.
Yeah. Yes, and Denise, we'd like to have a little personal profile because you've been such a wonderful volunteer in so many aspects, and of course, Earth Save Canada is quite meaningful to you, being volunteer there. And Earth Save Canada is their principles. Basically, what they're saying is we're educating people about the powerful effects of our food choices, and what these effects are on our own health, life on Earth, and the environment. And the Earth Save encourages people to shift towards a healthy plant-based diet. And you're a facilitator for much of that in a very quiet and very beautiful way. And so maybe let our people know just how comes you became involved with Earth Save Canada. The webpage is earthsave.ca.
Gosh, well, people told me about it a few years ago, and I immediately, as soon as I got there, realized this is my personal mecca. I got there, and they had this fabulous library and bookstore and resource center, and they have monthly potlucks and dine-outs and annual festival, book club, and many other activities. So do check out the website and see what's of interest.
That's earthsave.ca. Thank you, Denise Swanson, for letting us know about the EarthSave Readers Book, readers meetings once a month. And
thank you, Carl.
To Alart.
And I just wanted to say it's a really fascinating coincidence that you brought this book in today, because nobody knows here, but I've just recently been in email contact with Will Tuttle and invited him to be a guest on the show, not only to the Dynamic Health Show, but the Animal Voices Show, and he's responded that he's interested in doing that. So hopefully we will have him on the show in the near future.
Thank you a lot. Awesome. And Denise. And over to Alan and a little bit of music. Thank you.
And we've got a piece of music featuring Dana Lyons and John Seed entitled, very appropriately, I Am an Animal.
Headline. From beautiful Camp Orcaida on Orcas Island. John C., Dana Lyons, and the Endangered Predators. We got any animals out there?
Yeah! I am an animal.
Yeah. You are an animal.
Yeah.
We both are animals. We eat like animals. We dance like animals. We love like animals. We all are animals. We all are animals.
The reptiles have some class. They slither about in the grass. They like it when the weather's damp. They party deep in the swamp. They got smooth and shiny scales, long tongues and longer tails. Ooh.
The birds do it all with their beaks. They eat and they clean and they speak. Their wings take them high in the air. And who knows what they do up there. They've got dances that can't be beat. With their feathers and rubber feet. Tweet, tweet. Let's hear some birds out there.
Both are animals.
Yeah.
We eat like animals.
Yeah.
We dance like animals.
Yeah.
We love like animals.
Yeah.
We all are animals.
Yeah.
We all are animals.
Yeah.
The insects have some pride. The weather skeletons outside. They can live anywhere. Hot or cold, they do not care. With antennas and many eyes. They eat, reproduce, and they die.
The mammals are a wild bunch. They eat each other for lunch. They got fur as soft as silk. They feed their babies milk. They sing all the latest tunes. At night they howl at the moon.
Let's have a howl welcoming back the wild wolf to Washington.
The fish dig a whole nother scene. Their whole world is aquamarine. Some are thin and some are fat. Up their faces are flat. They take transatlantic trips. They do strange things with their lips. Ew.
I see some fish lips out there. But let's not forget the plants. The plants have so much fun. They don't eat anyone. They just soak up with the sun.
They rub the branches in the breeze. The dandelions tickle the trees. Oh,
I am an animal. You are an animal. We both are animals. We eat like animals. We dance like animals. We love like animals. We all are animals. We all are animals. I am an animal. I am an animal.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. And Greenpeace has recently put on a kind of a clever stunt. They created a crop circle here in British Columbia, an Abbotsford farmer's cornfield, a 61-meter-long crop circle shaped like a question mark. And I guess the question mark is about what is this stuff that's growing here? And it's genetically modified corn. Why is it growing here? Why is the government permitting these kinds of things? And they have come up with a report which reports on a couple of studies, or three studies, that were done as reviews of former studies which were conducted by Monsanto, and which were considered, Monsanto reported them as producing a safety profile for this genetically engineered food, and it was taken as such by the government and allowed onto the marketplace. Well, a review by an independent laboratory has criticized these studies as being as having come to false conclusions, and that there were significant changes in the liver and kidneys of rats that were fed this, these two varieties of corn put out by Monsanto. And one was a study on salmon, and which was conducted with corn as the genetically altered corn as the product to be tested. Well, what does this mean? Does this mean then that and there are no human studies that they are citing, so I presume that there are none. So on the basis of what's good or bad for rats, we have to modify our diets and include whatever the government says is fit for it. Now, there are some 30,000 different modified foods on our shelves right now. And that number is so high because the majority of processed foods contain soy, and half of North America's soy crop is genetically engineered. So it would be a nightmare for the regulatory agency to have every label on, to have the label state that the product that you're consuming is genetically altered, modified. But does this mean that Greenpeace thinks that we are just huge rats, and that rats are exactly the same as human beings in every respect, and that any trouble in the one species would automatically be extrapolated as being harmful to another? Well, they themselves admit in the report that we don't know how to interpret these findings and how to extrapolate them to human beings. On the other hand, they say the message is very clear, or the warning is very clear. Well, what the hell is so clear about it? Aspirin is deadly to rats. Now, on the basis of that, and the regulatory agency would not permit aspirin on the market, and yet it is sold by the billions and has never been, there are certain problems with it, yes, but they do not cause cancer as they do in rats, and they don't cause birth defects as they do in rats. Cats too are very much affected by aspirin and can kill them. A very small dose is fatal to cats. So this seems to me another issue where the exploitation of animals is used to justify somebody's position, whether pro or con. And it confuses everything, because are we to believe these studies, or are they irrelevant? Well, apparently, as I said, the government considers that if your product passes three different tests, two on rodents and one on an animal that is not a rodent, then it is presumed to be safe for human beings, or and can be entered into clinical trials, or just thrown onto the marketplace as it is, because the genetically altered foods have never undergone any clinical trials. So that on the basis of the on the basis of this kind of study, we are left hanging with no understanding, and we are simply subject to market forces and have to eat whatever is put in front of us.
Thank you, John, for your contribution. Yes, you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFR Radio 102.7 FM. This program and many others are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And we go with a different microphone. And many of our programs are posted on the our webpage, animalvoices.org. And there are two events coming up this weekend which are noteworthy. The one is that there'll be a number of the Vancouver Humane Society will be outside the art gallery tomorrow, Saturday, from 11 o'clock onwards. Tabling, you'll be able to meet many of your animal activists there, from Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals, from the Coalition for No Whales in Captivity, and of course Vancouver Humane Society. So also we have at Kate's Park, we have the Under the Volcano happening this coming Sunday from 11 o'clock right through the night at Kate's Park in North Vancouver. Yes, and online we have Jesse Fraser from the Valley Therapeutic Equestrian Stables. Welcome to Animal Voices, Jesse.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, you know, it's very unique that we have people who are able to understand horses and are sensitive enough to relate to them in such a way that we can create healing. And you're right here in Langley and doing the good work. So maybe you can just tell us what you're doing.
Yes. Valley Therapeutic Equestrian Association provides therapeutic riding activities for people with various disabilities. The majority of our horses are quite elderly. They're usually horses that people generally don't have much use for anymore because they can't do what is considered regular work. So we accept these lovely elderly animals that are just so good-natured. And they are the true therapists in our program, and they help us by just providing therapy for people with disabilities.
So what is it about horses that is so therapeutic? I mean...
Well, there's different aspects. There's the physical aspect. For an individual, for example, who has cerebral palsy, obviously they have limited movement and have mobility problems. And the movement of the horse, just that really gentle, rhythmic movement of the horse as they're walking, helps to loosen up all your muscles. It helps to improve balance and whatnot. For people with cognitive challenges, or for an example, those with autism, it really brings people out of their shells. These animals, there's something really special about them that just draws people out. And, you know, just helps to improve self-esteem, self-confidence. And, it helps to improve social skills and teaches kids, in particular with autism, to be able to socialize with people. These animals, these horses, love unconditionally, and so they seem to be able to create trust in these kids, which carries over in other aspects of their lives.
Now, our good sometime co-host Hazel and
yes.
Phil, they're listening in on while they're on the Queen Charlotte Islands, of course, on cooperadio.org. And, of course, they have there was Doran and Ivan, and that's how we got to know about. Maybe you can give us a little story or any examples of what's been happening and how it's helped people like Hazel's boy, Doran and Ivan.
Right. Doran was a boy it's when I first met Hazel. It was one of her foster children, and he was a boy that I worked with autism. And again, this child in particular really had difficulty communicating with people and interacting with people. He was very misunderstood, and he just had such a gentle soul. And when he was with the horses, though, he would just come out of their shell, just the simplest of tasks, such as feeding a horse an apple. He would just so enjoy watching this horse eating this apple that it would just bring him out of his shell. And many children with autism have difficulty making eye contact with people. And when Doran was around his horse, in particular James, it was the horse that he rode continuously, it was the one time that he would make eye contact with me, like, constantly, and just always look for me in the arena and whatnot. And Ivan has a more physical challenge, and again, it's a form of alternative therapy that cannot be duplicated in a physiotherapist's office. You just simply cannot duplicate that that movement that the horse provides just by walking. So it provides tremendous physiotherapy for kids with physical disabilities.
Now, Jesse, you mentioned that you're using mostly elderly horses.
Yeah.
So where do you get these horses from, and what kind of life have they led? Are you looking for a particular type of elderly horse, or?
Well, we have horses of all different types here. Many of them are elderly. Some are rescue cases from the SPCA. I remember one horse in particular, Harley, who was found, this was years ago, was found walking down the streets of Cloverdale in that really cold, it was Christmas morning, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, the police found these three starved animals walking down the streets of Cloverdale searching for food, and it was during a really cold spell at Christmas time, and it was well below freezing, and unfortunately two of the horses had to be euthanized. They were too far gone, they were just in such poor condition, but they saved Harley. And once he was healthy enough, they donated him to the society. And, he worked as a therapy horse, and he just loved it. He absolutely loved working with these children, having the second lease on life. And he worked in the program for years and years, well into his 30s, which is very unusual for a horse. But they receive such good care in these therapeutic riding programs that... many of them will continue their lives right up until their late 30s. We currently have in our program here an ex-race horse, a standard bred, and again, I know that many people hear the stories of standard breds that once they're no longer used for racing, that they're usually, many of them go to slaughter, but again, in many of the therapeutic riding programs, I know they will take these horses that can no longer race and are used again. They just have such lovely characters and lovely temperaments for therapeutic riding. They turn into phenomenal therapy horses and have active lives, again, well into their 30s. So that's the kind of program that we have. You know, we provide great, great homes for these horses that perhaps other parts of the industry would never have a use for anymore. So
you not only being therapeutic to people like Ivan and Doran, like you mentioned, but also it's a sanctuary maybe for these horses that otherwise wouldn't have found a home.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, you're located in Langley.
Yes.
And you know, I have a secret wish. I'd like to walk one of the horses with somebody on there.
Oh, we'd welcome you anytime. We'd love to have you out here.
I love horses.
Yeah, me too.
So you often need some volunteers.
We couldn't manage without volunteers. As I mentioned, we are a nonprofit society, so we don't receive any government funding. We do our own fundraising, so we're always looking for contributions. And again, for the nature of our riders, they're quite fragile and need some support. So we always need, for one rider, such as Ivan, for example, we would need someone to lead the horse and two people to sidewalk, to walk on either side of the horse to provide the rider with a little bit of support when needed. And we do all, you don't have to have any horse experience whatsoever, but if you'd like to, for those out there who would like to learn about horses and to work around these gentle creatures while helping these kids, we're always looking for more volunteers.
So out in Langley, and how do people contact you?
Well, you can either contact us by phone. Our number is 604-533-1262, or you could email us at info@vtea.ca.
VTEA, is it?
Yes.
That's Valley Therapeutic Equestrian Stables.
Association.
Association, okay. And how many horses have you got there?
At the moment, we have 7 in our program. It's a relatively small program, but we are focusing on expanding to accommodate more people. So we are looking for a couple of new horses for people that, again, would want to consider donating horses to us. And again, what we look for in a horse is one with a really kind, gentle nature.
Now, would you say your program is somewhat unique? Are there any other people in North America doing anything like what you're doing here?
Absolutely. There's approximately 500 therapeutic riding programs in Canada alone.
500?
Yes. It's
wow.
become, again, with our healthcare system the way it is, I think that healthcare professionals are constantly searching for alternative therapies within the community to help their patients. And therapeutic riding is hugely successful in providing different types of therapies for various individuals. So it is very, it's become quite popular. There's probably about 50 programs in British Columbia alone. And again, we don't receive, none of them receive government funding, so they're very dependent on community support to keep their programs running.
Now, the way I'm speaking to you and your wonderful voice, Jesse Fraser, one would think that there's this, not only a therapy involved, but there's the horse emits some kind of spirituality which is difficult to describe, which is, you know.
Without a doubt, yeah.
It involves, maybe the horses know that they're helping these kids.
Oh, I believe that. I think that for anyone who has been lucky enough to experience working around these animals and just spending time around them, there is truly something special about the spirit of the horse that does affect people in really amazing ways. I know what they do for me. I think my equine friends are just as close to me as my human friends, so I couldn't imagine my life without them.
Jesse Fraser, it's been a wonderful privilege to have you on Animal Voices and putting over that wonderful message about the horses that we love so much.
And we would love to have you out, Carl, anytime.
I will be coming out soon.
Great.
And your phone number is 604-533-1262. Give them a call and maybe you'll get to meet Jesse Fraser from the Valley Therapeutic Equestrian Association. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you, Carl.
Okay. Yes, and you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFR Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And the sad fact remains that in the United States, they've banned the slaughter. Well, that's the good news. The good news first is that they've banned the slaughter of horses, transportation of animals to Canada for slaughtering horses. But at the same time, some 52,000 horses are slaughtered in Canada for their meat. Yes.
Where does that meat go? Japan?
Japan, Belgium, a number of countries that it's actually a byproduct of the Premarin horses, the byproduct of producing the urine for estrogen replacement for postmenopausal women is they had to keep these horses pregnant. And then what to do with all the foals? And they developed a meat industry, and Canada is exporting this, and they're slaughtering horses. In fact, there was an alert that was sent out by Seneca Crossland from Kelowna, and it said that there are two more slaughterhouses killing horses in Canada. As an end to horse slaughter in the United States becomes an increasingly tangible goal, Canada has unfortunately slipped backwards into the arena of protection of our equine population. And she mentions these the Natural Valley Farms in Saskatchewan and Medallion Meats near Falkland. So there we have it. And we have Alart, our co-host, and I'm going to hand over the microphone to you. We over to Alart, and you have a good story.
I have a fun story. All right, and it's good that it's following the horse story. It's a mule story. And when I first came across it, I sort of burst out laughing, and then I went, wait a minute, should I be laughing? Or maybe I should be crying. And then I think in the end I ended up ultimately laughing. But I did have a lot of thoughts about it along the way. And I've just pulled this off the news. There, in the news in the last few days, there's been a number of articles written about mules. Now, in San Antonio, $5 buys a ticket to Bill Rivers' Saturday Night Rodeo and the chance to see three mules jump off a 24-foot high platform into a 6-foot deep pool of water. And I thought, no way. Anyways, Rivers says the crowd goes wild for his high-diving aquamules act. But neighbors and animal welfare activists say the show is downright cruel to the aging animals named Dipsy Doodle, Smokey, and Ingrid. Oh, and I just want to add this too. I learned later in the article that Ingrid, the horse named, and it's, I've also learned in a different article, it's actually two mules and a Shetland pony. But here they say three mules. But anyways, Ingrid is named for a joke, apparently after Ingrid Newkirk. One of the founders of PETA. So there's a story there that I don't know about, but at any rate, that's a little tidbit. Now, the owners say that the horses, the mules do this, they says, because they want to. And they're not forced in any way, Rivers said of the act that's been going on at his Lightning Ranch in Pipe Creek for the past 5 weeks. I've never had one get hurt. They like it, especially on a hot day. Now, Rivers said that these mules, which range in age from 16 to 22, and I'm glad that our last guest said that horses, you know, that they go fine until their late 30s and everything. I don't know what the age span of mules is, but, you know, this would make me think that they're maybe a middle age or something. Anyways, he says that they range from 16 to 22 years, and they're trained to jump. And he says they could jump right, it could turn right around and walk down the ramp that led them to the platform, but they never do. He says, you'd think that if one of them minded, they would have quit by now, he says. You can't hurt an animal. They're not that stupid. And so now here it is that three times a day, when these horses, because it's a traveling show. And so in various states, they do this thing. And three times during the day, the animals line up for their jump. And Ingrid leads the way, and she goes up this ramp with no physical prompting from her owners. She just knows it's time to go up this ramp and to the diving board. And there she stands between two small American flags. She drops her front hooves over the edge, and with a few looks, down kicks with her hind legs and dives headfirst into the 6-foot-deep pool. Now, another ramp leads up out of the pool and down again to the earth, and a refreshing and contented-looking mule takes the applause of about 100-strong crowd, and she takes a carrot. Now, the Bandera County Sheriff, Weldon Tucker, said that he's investigating the show after he got several concerned phone calls. And he said, my first impression of it is that it wasn't something that this animal would do naturally. And so, therefore, it's something that they had to look at. So they're trying to find out whether any laws have been broken. But, of course, Rivers is saying the mules like to do it. They're not being forced to do it. Nobody's pushing, prodding them to do it. They get off on it. They like to do it. But, of course, there's activists that are saying this is not natural. And therefore, because these animals are trained, no animal would do this naturally. So there's something wrong with it. So the story goes on here. Okay. So this mule diving show has traveled to fairs all over the U.S. after his father started it in 1959. Now, also, I read in another article that horse diving and mule diving has been going on since the 1800s. So this is nothing new. Anyways, he and his brother have switched off managing the act over the years, and Rivers said he let him borrow the mules this summer. So he says all these accusations come from many people who haven't even actually seen the act. They just hear the story and they freak out and they start complaining. They've never even seen the act. But at any rate, the horse, we must certainly not think that this is an appropriate act to be including an animal in. And this was said by Lisa Waith, who is with PETA. And now I don't know whether or not all of PETA endorses what she's saying, or whether she has stepped out the bounds of PETA and put out her own agenda. But anyway, she says that the group now knows only of Rivers Mule Show and a horse diving act at an amusement park in upstate New York, and says, we most certainly do not think that this is an appropriate act to include an animal in. No mule willingly jumps 30 feet into a pool of water. This is cruel, plain, and simple. Well, according to Tim Rivers, this is not unnatural for these horses because they willingly do it. And it's not cruel, otherwise they'd turn around and they wouldn't do it, but nobody's prompting them to do this. So anyways, now there's PETA is, I've got another article here, it says that PETA has attempted to stop this mule diving exhibition, but a veterinarian hired by the Prince Williams County VA Animal Control and County Attorney offices said that the mule diving was not cruel. So this came from a county vet. So some of River's neighbors are alarmed, and there's another quote here, says, "I haven't seen the act. I can't see things like that because it just hurts too much," said Jeannie Witherholtz, founder and president of the nearby Brighter Days Horse Refuge, which rescues abused and unwanted animals. Now, there's this Tim Rivers. He's a Florida cowboy. He's been a cowboy his whole life. His family was a cowboy, but he's been by activists. He's been abused, pelted with rocks, threatened with death, and he can no longer advertise these performances by his animals in advance for fear of violent protests. So he's taken these mules to courts in Alabama, Virginia, and Illinois, and earlier this year parked them outside the Florida State Capitol so that the State Committee on Animal Welfare could come down and see them, see for themselves that they're not injured, they're not hurt, they're not suffering, that they're fine. And four states have already banned his act, while others are investigating whether or not to let the mules perform. So, now, unlike many of his attackers, he has, as I said, has spent his whole life working with animals. So we have to say, is there some kind of projection that is being put upon him that is reasonable or unreasonable? His nephew, Deke Rivers, says these mules are treated like movie stars. They're fed, given a place to sleep, manicured, given new shoes, brushed, and taken all over the country. All they do is jump in a pool three times a day. And when they get that care after the jump, well, that's like a $50 bill to them. Do they look like they're suffering? Not while they stand well-groomed and chewing grass and they're a tented enclosure beside the diving board. So what they're saying is the Rivers are saying, is that it's the real movie stars, the real supermodels, the people who are looking to make a name for themselves that never even bother to come half the time to his shows, or most of the time to his shows, to see what they're talking about, that protest these shows. They don't even know what they're talking about. And they just attack them and their livelihoods and what the mules are doing out of pure ignorance. Now, there's also a video was shot by an amateur videographer, and in it they say that the mules look skittish and scared. Now I got to jump in here and say, well, there could be many reasons why. First of all, it's a subjective point of view, and second of all, you know, they might have nothing to do with the fact that they're about to jump, especially if they've done it hundreds of times before. They're probably used to it. So I don't see any reason for them to be skittish and scared. But if somebody has an agenda that they want to shut this down, they might decide to project they're skittish and scared. And they say, it's not something that any livestock needs to be doing. It's not natural, said this woman who shot the video. Now, she didn't want to be identified, by the way. They could break all four legs, their neck, whatever. It could injure them for life. Says James Buck, who's also with this Brighter Days Horse Refuge in Pipe Creek. Rivers says that the mules he has now have been doing the act for the past 10 years, and they have never suffered any injuries. He says, we do have a lot of animal rights activists that are against it, and of course you ask them, have you ever seen the show, and they say, well, no. Anyways, I want to wrap this up, but the point of what I'm saying is I'm seeing that, you know, I'm speaking with stunt performer mentality, because that's what I do. Because when people say it's not natural, they've often said that about activities that I do as a stunt performer. And certainly skydiving or scuba diving or any of these activities are not natural for human beings. You have to get equipment on, you do these things. But part of the thrill of doing these things is because they're not sort of inherently natural. They step outside our boundaries, and they give us a thrill, and they give us a skill as human beings. Now, who are we to deny that a mule could learn a skill and enjoy it? And as this woman we had on our last guest said, that the horses have this connection to the children that come, or the people that come to the farm. Who is to say that these mules don't have a connection to the crowds that come and observe them, and that they don't get some kind of enjoyment? There seems to be a projection of this ignorance and this stupidity, and the fact that that no animal can evolve and get trained and get off on a new skill. So I'm speaking as a person who has experienced opposition from some of the skills that I've developed from people who...
Thank you a lot. And we only have a few minutes left here. I also had a news item here about from Saskatchewan, is that a counselor at a northern Saskatchewan Bible camp is feeling the heat for killing and roasting a squirrel over a campfire. A few counselors ate some of the squirrel. None of the 120 children at the camp had any, and most didn't appear to be concerned about the incident. So the caption is in the newspaper said, just because it's not illegal doesn't mean it's right. The camp plans to send a written apology to parents and has instituted a policy against throwing sticks at squirrels. Anyway, so animal kindness, that's what we're about. I would like to, we have a few minutes left. We have 3 minutes left. And I'd like to have a quote here from Peter Singer, who said that those who claim to care about the well-being of human beings and the preservation of our environment should become vegetarians for that reason alone. They would thereby increase the amount of grain available to feed people everywhere, reduce pollution, save water and energy, and cease contributing to the clearing of forests. Moreover, since a vegetarian diet is cheaper than one based on meat dishes, they would have more money available to devote to famine relief, population control, or whatever social or political cause they thought was urgent. Anyway, I'd like to remind people about at Kate's Park on Sunday, there's going to be the Under the Volcano celebration. It's a worthwhile event coming out to North Vancouver, the Deep Cove area. It's a wonderful music celebration there. And in case you're not going to go to the Abbotsford Air Show, which the Georgia Strait has a gigantic headline on it, and it says in big, bold, black letters, "The Sin of Air Travel." We might well like to look into the environmental aspects of the sin of air travel. Well, we'd like to thank Denise Swanson from the Earth Save Readers Group, earthsave.ca, and John and Allard, and always Alan Jensen for being in the studio for us. Many of our programs are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And I'd like to close off with Alice Walker's statement, with which I started the program, and she said, "The animals of the world exist for their own reasons. They were not made for humans any more than black people were made for white, or women were created for men." Have I got you all on board now? And thank you for listening.